A lot of people don't realize, even strength training isn't even the best name, the best word for it. Resistance training is, because you're not just making your muscle stronger, you're making your tendons and your ligaments stronger too. And that's even more important when it comes to preparing yourself for a race.
Running 100 miles seems impossible and maybe even kind of crazy. And it is, but we believe in big, crazy dreams. That's why we ran 100 miles. It was such a life-changing experience for us. We decided to devote this podcast to preparing and inspiring you to run your first ultra race.
Are you ready to feel the highest highs and the lowest lows? Are you ready to do what you once thought was impossible? Are you ready for your trail to 100?
Thank you for joining us here on Trail to 100, the podcast made to help you finish your first 100-mile race. My name is Jacob Bateman, and joined along with me today is my beautiful and lovely wife, Melody.
Howdy.
And as our special guest, we have a Pillar of Ultra Running episode for you guys. We have a certified personal trainer, Caleb Mathewson, joining us today. Now, Caleb, as I said earlier, is a personal trainer who works for Train to Hunt. They specialize in helping hunters get fit and healthy for the mountains so that they can go in the backwoods and rock and haul out that elk for miles from miles back in out to the road once they get their big game animal. And so that's a pretty cool mission about what his company does. But with that, Caleb also runs ultras. And Caleb has a unique perspective about being a certified trainer who prioritizes strength with running, as he has both goals that involve a lot of strength with hauling elk out of the mountains and also running ultra marathons. So we were able to talk to Caleb about the importance of strength training, why you need it, where to start, and how to implement it on your ultra running journey. And he had some great knowledge to share about it. You can feel his passion of combining fitness and the outdoors. Great guy to talk to. Really had a lot of good nuggets of knowledge to share.
Yeah, about. We get a little bit nerdy and it's fun.
Yeah. But he definitely gives some great advice on how to get started on that strength training journey as you go for your 100-mile goal. Well, Caleb, welcome to the podcast today. We are so excited to talk with you.
Thanks, Jacob. I'm really, really excited to be here. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah, you have. I found you, I feel like, about a year ago when you put out your own podcast. It was Grit Outdoor Collective. Is that what
it's
called?
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. And I started listening to that. I found you on social media, which cued me onto that. And ever since I started listening to your podcast, I'm like, this guy is our kind of guy. We have got to talk to him. So we are excited about it because you're a runner, you're a personal trainer, and you're a hunter. And I think that's just a sweet combination. And
I feel like it's a lot of our listeners, honestly.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
It's good to hear.
So, Caleb, let's just go back to the beginning. What got you into running in the first place?
I started running in college, so it was my freshman year, and I got started in running because of hunting. And I think everybody that's ever done anything in hunting and athletics knows who Cam Haynes is, and that was kind of the person that I met him and got a chance to ask him about that, and so I became infatuated with ultra marathons and running and hunting and all that kind of stuff. So I started running, ran cross country, did the 5Ks, 8Ks, 10Ks, that whole kind of thing. And then started running some ultra marathons after college and just progressed from there. So it was probably, I don't know how many years ago that is. It's 16 or 17 years now.
Okay. So you said you started doing ultra marathons. So how many ultras have you done?
I have done 6, and 5 550Ks and 150 mile. So not a tremendous amount. I did, because when after outside of college, I started with more, it was more mountain trail races. So I lived in Colorado then. And so I ran the Pikes Peak Marathon, which isn't an ultra technically, but if anybody that's listening has run it, it feels like one because it's 13 miles from, I don't know what the elevation start is, 13 miles from the town of Manitou Springs to the summit of Pikes Peak. And it's over 14,000 feet, of course, and then back down. So it may
be an ultra.
Right, right. Yeah, that's what I would say. It certainly feels like one. But so I ran a lot of those types of races before I actually started running some ultras. And then ran a lot of 50Ks. And of course, you'd probably know 50Ks can be, you know, you can run a 50K if it's flat and run it in 4.5 hours, or you can run a 50K in the mountains and summit, you know, you can run over 13,000 feet in the midst of it, and it can take 8 hours for the 50K.
12 for this 12. Guy. I've done
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's
a 50K. You just never know. It took me 12 hours one right. time.
Which is, by the way, which is a lot harder than running a 50K in 4.5 hours. I can tell you that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. No, agreed. There's a big range with an ultra on the difficulty that can be there. So you started then, was it you wanted to do these mountain races to get in shape for the hunting season? Is that was the idea then?
Yeah, pretty much. The idea was, all right, if I'm going to get ready for elk hunting in Colorado, I need to be running in the mountains. And so that was the first thing I looked for is, you know, what races can I find that are the most elevation gain, the most hardcore, difficult races I can find? I'm going to go run those, and I'm going to train that way too. So train by running 14ers and trying to get up in the mountains. And basically if I was running flat, I didn't feel like I was doing, of course I learned, you know, that speed work on flats is still important, but at first it was all about the more hills I can get in, the better, because I wanted to be ready for the mountains come fall.
And then you just fell in love with ultra running?
Yeah, pretty much. As much. I mean, it's a weird way to put it, because you fall in love with the pain you put yourself through to push yourself. I fell in love with pushing yourself that far and just being, because I just love being outdoors and being in the mountains and being in a place where there's no cell service and you're just by yourself with your thoughts. And sometimes there's people around you, but in an ultra marathon, you're not running surrounded by people like you are if you run like a road marathon or something like that. And I just fell in love with the pushing yourself to the limit and seeing how far you can travel and what you can see and what you can experience in the midst of, you know, those ups and downs that come inevitably in an ultra race. And I just love the process of it every little bit.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
That's awesome.
It's so did you find that it did help you come the hunting season, that elk hunt out in the backcountry hiking through? Did it actually help you, or was it like, were you wondering, I don't know if that did that much good?
It did, because, well, a couple things. Before I did that kind of training, what would happen is, you know, I'd shoot an animal in the mountains, and then I'd be basically worn to my limit. And then I'd get to this animal and realize I need to get this thing back to the truck. And I was already done, you know? And so number one was, you know, I found myself like I wasn't to my limit anymore because I'd been training so much. So I felt like, okay, I can get this, all this meat that I'm going to provide my family, I'm going to use to provide for my family. I can get it back before it spoils. I can get it back to the truck quickly. And then I'm not dead by the time I get back. But then during the hunt as well, I found that, you know, I could go further. And when you run, you know, when you're running in the mountains for hours at a time, and then you go hunting and you're walking, everything just seems so much closer. Like, you don't look at a mountain and be like, oh, that's this insurmountable thing. You look at it like, oh yeah, I can, you know, I would have run that in 3 hours during the summer, so I'm just going to go ahead and hike up it, no problem. And then when you see animals and you think, you know, I don't know. Do you guys hunt at all? Or
I do. Yeah. Okay.
So you know. So if you see elk and then the winds poor, if you're out of shape, then you want to like figure out the shortest route to get to them. But if you're in shape and you've been working hard, you're like, I'm going to go around over this ridge and I'm going to go all the way around to make sure I get the wind right. And then you make the smart decisions that are going to get you in range of the animal rather than making poor ones. So those are the two ways that I found it helped me tremendously, and just the confidence. In the backcountry, it's safer because you're not mentally drained when you're in the backcountry. It's safer. It's more effective. All of those things.
Yeah. I just second that. I've noticed ever since I've started ultra running, when I go out on those hunts in the mountains, like, 'cause I've gone out with other people who aren't ultra runners. They don't. Cool as you. They don't. I love them. But they don't. They're not in the same kind of shape, you know. And I see, you know, a mountain, a peak, an area, and I'm like, ooh, like that. We got to go over there. And then I see them just immediately in their eyes, like defeat, and they're like. No, we're not going over there. But to me, as an ultra runner, I see that peak and I think that, oh, that's very doable. Like, we'll be up there in no time if we just start walking up it. So it definitely like helps change your perception of what is doable and what's not. And and I think you make a valid point there of just being safer out there because you have more energy, your mind's more clear.
Yeah. Yeah. The perspective is totally different.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So then along with that, then you are a personal trainer. How long have you been doing that?
Only a couple years. I mean, I'd been putting, you know, training plans together for family members and friends for years, but I never had the certification. So I hesitate to say longer than that because I don't think I'm supposed to.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I got the certification about a year and a half ago. Okay. And actually started. And that's when I started working for Train to Hunt and started putting programs together for them. And I trained a little bit at 24 Hour Fitness and then about to be training at Anytime Fitness now. But most of my work has been with Train to Hunt. And which, by the way, it's good to hear that so many of your listeners are hunters, and because then this, they know what we're talking about. But yeah, Train to Hunt's not just, you know, it's not just for hunters. It's really for anybody that's going to spend time in the mountains. Getting yourself prepared for the mountains is important. I mean, that's kind of what I've been doing for them. So it's professionally only about a year and a half now I've been training, but just been doing it longer.
So tell me about this Train to Hunt. Like, what do you guys do that, like, for your clients then?
Yeah, well, it started because, you know, Kenton Claremont, who's the founder, he started it because he saw a need in the hunting industry. People needed to know what training plans they need to do to get ready for hunting season because, you know, as you know, the fitness space is so, it's so complicated and you don't know where to start and you don't know what's good and what's bad because magazines are promoting, you know, their thing and their products and whatnot. But he found a need to put together a training plan specifically for getting you ready for hunting elk in the mountains in September, which is where he started. And so the training plans are basically prepared to get you ready for the mountains, especially if you're hunting. It works for more than that, but there's a lot of workouts, at least the ones that I put together, are very focused on preparing people, their cardiovascular ability to carry heavy loads on their back, but also overall strength in their core, in their shoulders and back, and especially in their legs, so that they're prepared to, you know, to hike for, you know, days at a time in the mountains, but then also be able to draw their bow back and take a shot with their heart rate high and their legs shaking and making the shot when it counts. And so that's what Train to Hunt's been doing since 2008. And what I've been trying to do for the last year and a half with them is, or maybe it's less than that. I can't remember the exact time, but what we've been trying to do as a team is just put together those workouts that are going to help people get ready for that one specific thing, which is hunting in the fall and being as effective as we can when we're out there.
Wow, I think that is so cool. I feel like a lot of people, when they think hunting, I feel like it's easy to overlook the fitness aspect of it. Mm-hmm. I've seen a lot of hunters who don't, like, the only time they work out is when they go out and hunt. And that, not that there's anything necessarily wrong with that, but if you work out, prepare for the hunt, it's probably going to go a little bit better. Anyway, so I just think that's really cool. I think that's something, if you are going to be a hunter, you know, maybe think about doing the physical preparation, hitting the gym and doing those things. So I think it's really cool that you guys do that.
Yeah.
Well, honestly, as you say that, I know we're running podcasts. I promise you, listeners, we're getting to the running part.
But there's so much transference between hunting and ultra running. I actually, for a short time, I was getting a lot of clients who wanted to run ultras to get in shape for hunting season. And I considered that my specialty for a short time. So, and I still do have some people reach out who want to do ultras to get ready for the hunting season. So
do you, speaking of that, do you like have any sort of when you think about running ultras for the hunting season, say, you know, they want to do what you guys said, like, let's say an elk hunt in September. You got a guy and he wants to get in shape for that elk hunt. What kind of ultra would you even suggest? Are you telling them, like, you know, like, let's just do a 50K, let's just do a mountain marathon, or where do you even start? I know that's a little bit of a loaded question there, because everyone's on, has their own specific needs, but I guess, where do you start with people when they do say, hey, I like the sound of running an ultra, but I also want to go hunting, so I want to combine the two.
Yeah, there's a lot of, you're right, it's a loaded question. There's a lot of contingencies that go into that, like whether or not they've done an ultra before and things like that. But, you know, really anything you do running wise is gonna make you better for the hunting season. And so, you know, my questions to them would be a balance of, you know, how important is the ultra to you? Because there's a balance there. Like, the ultras can become more important. And because if you just want to do an ultra to get me ready for hunting season, then I would say find a hilly 50K and just make it through it, because that's going to make you tougher, not just physically, but mentally as well. I'm never going to tell anybody, like, I mean, you don't have to run at all to do well hunting. You can, there's plenty of people that are out of, you know, not out of shape, but just, you know, plenty of people that don't prepare, and they do great because they're amazing hunters, and that's fine. So if somebody was like, I want to do an ultra because I want to get ready for hunting, I would say, all right, find a trail race first, and then do that, and then work your way up, and let's plan a 50K in like August before hunting season starts, so you can do it and toughen yourself up. And then if you want to do more from there, then great, but you don't have to be Cam Haines. You don't have to run 250 miles in a race to prepare yourself for elk season, but whatever you do is going to make you better in the mountains. And I think that's important.
I like that. Whatever you got to do to toughen yourself up, do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because for some people,
a 10K is going to push them to their absolute limit.
Yeah.
And if that does it, then that's a great place to start.
Yeah. Yeah. I brought my brother on actually last year. He had this specific goal. He's a big hunter. I like to hunt, but he is a diehard. And so he wanted to get in shape. And so what he chose was a marathon on the mountain that we hunt on. And he did it, you know, like about a month before the season happened. And so I went out there with him on this marathon, and it was a hike run through the mountain. And so it was a great experience.
But awesome.
So we wanted to talk and hit about injury prevention for runners with you as a personal trainer and having that knowledge in strength training, because I mean, it's one of the biggest, especially for new runners, as we specialize in first time 100-mile runners. It's easy to like just see the 100-mile distance and just think, okay, I just got to run.
And just increase my miles. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, but almost every time, that then leads to all of a sudden
the injury rate in running is just ridiculously high.
Yeah.
You're not running anymore because you got all these things popping up and hurting you now from all that running. So what is the best way to prevent injuries in running?
Well, it's not doing too much mileage too quickly. Could definitely tell you that. And by the way, it's awesome what you guys do is focusing on that, for giving people the information and the knowledge and the inspiration that they need to do their first 100, because, you know, everyone wants to do it. It's such a cool distance. But I think along with your mileage and being careful to increase that, I really do think strength training, which I know we'll get into, is such an important part of it. And it's neglected because I just think it's misunderstood. Not that anybody is not doing research and not smart about it. It's because there's not enough good information out there. Because like I said, the fitness industry is so, well, it's an industry, you know, its goal is to make money. And so you have a lot of companies that are pushing certain programs or whatnot, and that might not be the best for what you're preparing for. And so strength training for runners is one of the best things that they can do for injury prevention, because you're going to be able to fill a lot of gaps that you're not filling while you're running, because running is a very specific exercise, and it is a skill And so there's a lot of things that you can do to help supplement that. As long as you don't, you know, try to gain size or something like that and negate the speed that you're trying to gain or the endurance that you're trying to gain while you're preparing for the ultra.
So for people who don't know why do you not want to gain mass and run at the same time?
There's a couple. Well, at least if your goal is to run as fast as you can personally at a race for 100, you know, there's a couple of reasons. Number one, the more muscle mass you have, the more heat your body generates, which, as we all know, the hotter it is, the harder it is to run. It really is. But also, the more muscle you have, the more calories your body burns, and it's really hard to stay on top of that. If you're a bigger guy, muscle size, and you're running, your body is burning a lot more calories than if you were 20 pounds lighter. And if you get in a deficit, you may not notice it at 20 miles, but at 60, 70 miles, you're going to hit a serious low point. But also think in terms of, you know, when your body's hitting the ground, I don't remember the statistic, but the amount of force that travels through your feet up through your joints is tremendous to begin with. But if you have more weight and you're taking however many steps you're taking over a 100-mile race, that's a tremendous amount of pressure and strain and impact that's being transferred through your, you know, your ankle, your Achilles tendon, your patellar tendon, your IT band, all the way up through your hips, that it could be lessened if you weighed a little bit less. And again, it's not, you know, everybody's built different and it's not like a comparison weight thing, but you don't want to be in the gym trying to gain muscle mass while you're training for, I mean, if you want to, I guess, but it's not going to help you run faster if you're gaining size.
So there is more load that goes through your joints when you weigh more, but if the weight is from muscle, like if you're stronger, can your body handle that load better?
Yes, but there's a point of diminishing returns. And that's kind of what I've specialized in, is how do you gain strength and without gaining too much size so that you reach a point of diminishing returns where you have more. And there's not really a way to measure this. And if there is, it's a scientist that's way smarter than I am. So, but there is a point of diminishing returns. But I think strength training can be done in such a way that you can gain the strength that you need with, as long as you're looking at the right types of workouts, then you can gain strength without gaining size, which by the way, gaining size, especially when you're running as much as you are for an ultra marathon, it's very, very difficult. And so I really don't think there's a danger for most runners to gain size while they're training for an ultra marathon. It would take a very focused effort to do that. But the reason I bring that up is it's important to differentiate between strength training and what it can accomplish in terms of strength and endurance, and reminding people that just getting stronger doesn't automatically equal gaining size, because you don't want to gain size. But you do want to get stronger, and there is benefit to that.
That makes sense. Sorry, go ahead.
So, I'll just be straight up with you. I'm a little lost on my strength training right now.
As are a lot of runners. Yes,
you're right. There's a million coaches out there who will give you like, this is your mileage for the week. This is what you're supposed to do. This is your speed workout for your run. This is your long run. But then there's not a lot of direction from that coach about, you know, like what should I be doing with my strength? Because I don't want to get hurt. I want to make sure that I can be ready on race day and that I'm feeling strong race day, because I ran an ultra where I did zero strength. I showed up feeling broken.
And haven't we all?
Yes.
Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of people who know how to run, and then there's a lot of people who know how to lift. But I feel like finding this hybrid athlete, I feel like that's a whole nother thing.
So like, what are like baseline points that like when a runner, okay, I know I need to be doing strength. Now, where do I start? I mean, it's like, what should I be looking for in like workout plans or coaches or, you know, or online research plans, anything like, you know, what should I be trying to, how do I figure out a strength routine is basically what I'm asking.
And before you answer that, I also want to know, how do you, balance that strength training throughout the year? Because I feel like maybe you'll find someone who says, okay, this is what you do to strength train. But depending on where you're at in your season and what your goals are, you should be strength training more sometimes, strength training less sometimes. So maybe kind of explain like how you balance the strength training throughout the year.
Sure. So I'll get really nerdy real quick first, and then I'll get a really basic. Just but the nerdiness is just to add credibility. So when you're running, you're doing an aerobic zone 2 type exercise. It's steady state cardio, and so not only that, but you're also using only certain muscles. And you're also moving only in a sagittal plane, which means there's three planes of movement when it comes to working out. There's the transverse plane, which is basically everything that's rotating this way. Sorry about my mic. And then there's the frontal plane movement, which is all the movements as if you were in a hallway and there was a wall right here and a wall right behind you, and you can only move to the side like this. And then sagittal plane movements are if you're in a skinny hallway where the walls are right here, and you're only moving in this direction. So think like running. Yeah, think like running, arm curls, deadlifts. Those are all sagittal plane movements. So when you're running, it's a sagittal plane. You're using slow twitch muscle fibers, and you're using your oxidative energy system. And there's two other energy systems, and it's important for your body to be balanced. And so all that being said, the what you're looking for in strength training is first of all, it's important to it is important to find a good coach. And I don't want to make it sound like a sales tactic, because I am a personal trainer, but you really do need to find a good coach, or at the very least, you know, go on YouTube and find some legitimate runners that have done well in strength training, or vice versa. And there's a lot of them out there. You know, you can look at Nick Bear, you can look at Fergus Crowley, you can even look at Cam Haynes. You know, you can look at people that have done both really well and see how they balanced it. But you really need to find somebody that can recommend specific training for this, because you're not going to go in Muscle and Fitness and find a good workout plan for a runner. But the important thing is to start off with basics, basic compound movements, and probably start off with body weight movements as well. You know, you can do body weight or gym, but starting out with body weight movements really lessens your chance for injury, because you're just moving yourself. But it's easy to go on YouTube and find like how to do a proper body weight squat, how to do a proper push up, how to do a pull up, how to do lunges, how to do all these basic movements, and start with that. Because it was amazing to me when I first started running, after a few months and feeling like I was getting pretty fast, how weak my body weight squat still was, because it's more range of movement, and how weak my push up and pull up was, because I just wasn't strong in my core. And so starting with those is important, but finding a trainer then to help you progress from there, and sticking with compound movements. And compound, by the way, means that there's more than one joint at a time moving. So anytime you're moving several joints at a time, it's a compound movement. So you've probably seen people like sitting on those leg extension machines where they're extending their leg. Or they're curling their leg down. Those are not compound movements, because you're only moving your knee joint. But a compound movement would be a squat or a lunge, because you're moving several, or a deadlift. Push-ups and pull-ups are compound, because you're moving several limbs, or several joints are moving at one time. And those are important, because your goal is not to gain size in a certain muscle. Your goal is to keep your body overall strong, and therefore more energy or more injury resistant. But then you start but the basics, you start with the basics like that and keep it as simple as possible, because every little bit you're doing is going to help. But then you have to pay attention to, and this is where like some of the programming I write is focused on, all of those energy systems, those planes of movement that you're not hitting when you're running. So the transverse and the frontal plane of movement, and then tapping into the ATP energy system, which is by doing like sprints and really heavy weights. They're tapping into the phosphorolytic system, which is, I think I said that right. Probably not. Somebody will correct me, I'm sure. But glycolytic system, that's what it's called. Glycolytic system. And that's when you're doing like tempo runs, and that's glycolytic system, or like you're doing 400 meter repeats. That's what that is. And making sure you're fitting and stuff like that. And that's also, weightlifting when you're doing sets of 8 to 10 repetitions. That's glycolytic system type movement. But making sure that you're hitting all of those different energy systems, hitting the different muscle fibers, the fast twitch muscle fibers by doing heavy weights, by doing sprints, all that kind of stuff. I could go on for forever about all those different things, but it's a matter of starting with the basics and then adding in the things that you're missing when you're running, not as a way to get bigger or necessarily, but just as a way to make yourself stronger, not just in your muscles, but also in your ligaments and tendons. This is where the injury prevention piece comes in, is runners are not doing anything to strengthen their ligaments and tendons. And that's what's taking the brunt of the load when you're running long distance races. And a lot of people don't realize, even strength training isn't even the best word for it. Resistance training is, because you're not just making your muscles stronger, you're making your tendons and your ligaments stronger too. And that's even more important when it comes to preparing yourself for a race. And then Melody, to answer your question about how you plan that with a race, is when you're putting together any kind of workout program, whether it's just a running plan or whether you're weightlifting plan or doing both, you have to balance volume and intensity. And when intensity goes up, volume must go down. When volume goes up, intensity must go down. And so I always start off, you know, I look at the whole year or whatever the macro cycle that's leading up to that race. And you start off with low intensity and low volume. And then the volume goes up. The volume is what's going to go up first. So you're going to be running more miles. You're going to be doing lots of push-ups, lots of squats, lots of lunges, things like that. And then the volume is going to start to taper a little bit. The intensity is going to go up. So you're going to be doing more mile repeats, more tempo runs, more heavy hill stuff. You're going to be start to do like heavier squats, heavy pull-ups, you know, just heavier weight things that you can only do, you know, 4, 5, 6 reps of. That's higher intensity. But then once you get closer to the race, then the weightlifting intensity is going to go down. The running intensity is going to stay fairly high. And then, of course, once you get closer to the race, you need that taper. So the running intensity is going to stay fairly high, but the volume is going to go way down because you're getting ready for that race and you want to keep your muscles primed and tuned and ready to go, but you don't want to have too much volume so that your legs are heavy come race day. So that's kind of how I typically split it up. It's always just a balance of volume and intensity, because you can't run 5 miles at the same pace you run 100 meters in. And so when intensity goes up, volume must come down and vice versa.
That makes sense. I feel like that is where a good coach comes in to help you balance that volume and intensity.
Right.
I think that's where it gets difficult and a little bit more technical than just finding a Google plan or following a weight training app.
Right. Yep.
So I'm just like, this is helping me realize just how a coach that knows strength training is, if you want to run an ultra and you're looking into hiring a coach of any sort, like that is you, that's like just as important as they know how to build your plan of miles and speed work and long runs. Mm-hmm. Like you need to be making sure that they can make you a strong runner, not just a runner that can do one motion a lot.
Yeah. Right? So I have a couple more questions. So one question, you mentioned you want to get your muscles stronger, but you said that's even more important to get your tendons and ligaments stronger. So how do you strengthen your tendons and ligaments specifically?
The same way that you strengthen your muscles. It's just that tendons and ligaments grow and hence recover slower. So if you've ever like strained a muscle, it comes back pretty quickly. But if you ever strain a ligament or tendon, they get so much less blood flow. And so it takes way longer to recover, but it also takes a lot longer to get them stronger. And so it's the same workouts you're doing when you're doing training your muscles. So, you know, if you're doing a push-up, for example, you're working out your tendons and ligaments as well. But the difficulty that most people run into is most people, when they start lifting, their goal is to get big and strong, and your muscles grow so much faster. And so if you push it too hard and you progress too quickly, like you're eating a lot of food, you're gaining muscle mass and all that kind of stuff, your tendons and ligaments cannot keep up with that and they're going to get hurt. But again, most runners aren't going to be gaining muscle size, and their goal is not to do that, of course, but just by doing all of these workouts, it's not just about their muscles are getting stronger, which they are. And with the muscles getting stronger, they're becoming more efficient runners. Their endurance capacity is increasing by their muscles being stronger a little bit. But more importantly, they're getting gains in their, I hate to say gains, that sounds like such bro science, but you're strengthening your ligaments and tendons too. And that's going to be even more beneficial come race day, because, you know, when people drop out is when you'd have a ligament or tendon give way, and there's a connection between two bones or between a muscle and a bone that gives way, then you're done. And so you're not doing any different workouts. It's just by doing workouts at all, just by doing resistance training at all, you're improving your strength in your ligaments and tendons. And that's so important for running.
But you just want to make sure that you're not progressing. You're not overloading the joints and
right.
the ligaments.
Cause that's how you get, hurt.
That makes sense.
And that's where volume and intensity comes into play too.
That makes sense. And just giving yourself enough recovery. That makes sense.
Right.
And then this is kind of backtracking just a little bit, because I feel like, you know, we keep talking about how we don't want a whole bunch of mass. We don't want a whole bunch of weight. Do you feel like, I'm just curious what your thoughts are here. I always say that road runners are like sports cars and then trail runners are like monster trucks. Do you feel like that's accurate? And do you feel like mountain runners do tend to be a little bit more muscular and maybe put on a little bit more mass than road runners do?
I do. And I don't know if that's just a function of the type of people the races attract, or if that's a function of, you know, I would tend to think that it's a function of you just need to be an all-round better athlete if you're going to run in the mountains, because it seems like the further the races get sometimes, the more all-round built people look, like for whatever reason. Like I've seen the starting lines of these 200-mile races. I don't know if you've watched any of those at all, but the starting line of those 200-mile races, there's some athletes on those, like just all around athletes, and they do really, really well because for them, it's more about, I'm just going to put one foot in front of the other for 250 miles. But I don't know why it's like that, but I have noticed that same thing. And that's got me asking questions of people like, what do you think? But again, the winners of those 200 mile races are still the light, fast people, you know, none of those big, a guy that's my size, I'm not big by any means, but a guy that's my size is not going to beat Courtney DeWalter. It's just not going to happen. You know, she weighs 130 pounds and runs like the wind. So.
Right. No, that's a good point. So you're saying ultra running is harder and you have to be a more well-rounded athlete, AKA running on the trail, or trail runners are cooler than road runners.
You
just kidding.
You did not hear that from me.
Melody is always taking digs at roadrunners every chance she can.
But no, I will say this though.
A little bit, just kidding.
Eliud Kipchoge, from what I've heard, he is a body weight resistance exercise beast. Apparently, people that work with him know that he can bang out push ups, lunges, squats, and pull ups better than anybody they know. Like just all round, he's strong, and he's not big. You know, he's the best marathon runner in the world, or pretty darn close. But he is strong. He is very, very strong, and all that body weight training—that's the reason that he's been able to get to his later-ish years for a marathon runner and still run the times that he's running.
That makes sense. So body composition doesn't necessarily correlate with how strong you are.
Nope.
That's a good thing to remember.
Yeah, that's true.
I've been reading Born to Run recently, and I just got through the part where he's talking about the Tara Mahara. I don't know, have you read that book?
Yeah, it's one of my favorite books.
Okay.
He's a barefoot runner, of course.
Oh, yeah. And we'll get to the barefoot running part. But he's talking about the Tara Mahara, and the author is talking to McDougal's talking about all his injuries that he's struggled with, and it really, what you're preaching is almost exactly what he said when he starts talking about how the Tara Mahara don't consider themselves runners. They're more so athletes. Like they don't, you just getting good at one motion, you'll be good to it to a point, and then all of a sudden you're going to burn out and fizzle because you're just doing that one thing. He's mm-hmm. talking about how the Tarahumara are like playing all these games when they're growing up. They're like jumping off rocks and things like to where they're strengthening their just overall body to become an athlete, and how we need to stop considering ourselves runners and start considering ourselves more of athletes, and that will make us into better runners.
And start jumping off of more rocks.
Yes.
Yeah, barefoot.
Yeah.
Anyways. I feel like that's a good transition into our barefoot so running here.
You, when we reached out to you, I didn't even know this about you. So you said that you have a more barefoot minimalist style running technique that you've gotten more into. Tell us about what you do with your running and how you got into that style.
Yeah, I was looking around to see if any of my shoes were sitting around so I could show you what I use. But so when I started running, the first thing that happened is I immediately was like having IT band and knee issues almost right away. And I had bought like these cheap shoes at Walmart or whatever. And I went into Runner's Roost in Lakewood, Colorado. I was living at the time. And they told me, they're like, oh, you pronate really bad. You have weak arches. You need to wear these shoes. And so I got these never forget them, these red Mizuno shoes that just had this huge arch support thing on the inside. And they just looked so ridiculous. But I ran in them. And then I found that the pain went away for a little bit. And then as the shoes got worn out, then it got worse, and it was worse the second time. And then I went back in, they're like, oh, well, it looks like it's getting worse because the volume you're running, you need orthotics. And so they kept adding stuff. And about that time I read Born to Run. And I'd also been following Tony Krupiska. Probably never going to say his name right as long as I live, but he lived in Boulder at the time. And I'd seen him around running with, you know, basically nothing, like sandals practically. And I was like, how can that work? And then I read Born to Run, of course. And I thought, okay, there's something here, because if I have arches on my feet, if I get them stronger, wouldn't that help? Wouldn't putting them in essentially a glorified cast for my foot, wouldn't that help me to get stronger in my feet? And so I started to run on the grass barefoot at the end of my normal runs. Just a little bit at a time, just as much as I could handle, and then slowly added to it. And then it took a good year of slowly transitioning down. So every time I'd buy a new pair of shoes, I'd get a lighter, a little bit lighter, a little bit more minimalist, a little bit less drop, heel drop, a little bit less arch support, and just kept working my way down. And then I never had an injury again. I just never looked back and just kind of attacked it. But it was a slow process. It was a very slow transition.
How long did it take?
It took about a year and a half. Yeah. So it took some time because I was a new runner, and then all I'd run in for the first like 5 or 6 months was these really big supportive. There was no Hokas at that time. There was no like those big shoes. It was just, they were just big, clunky, supportive shoes. Yeah.
So what would your advice be for someone who's not a beginner? Let's say they're an ultra runner and, you know, they run 80 miles a week and they've been running in these glorified casts for most of their running career. How would they transition? Because I feel like it makes sense as a beginner runner you're already at the beginning. So let's just from the beginning, learn how to run without shoes. But if you're already in the habit, I feel like it would be harder to transition.
Yeah, I would say so. Cause I walked one of my friends through that later, walked him through the same thing. And it took a lot longer. You had to be much more careful, but cause you're right. It's not just a matter of just transitioning the shoes. If you've been doing it for a long time, now it becomes a matter of your form, because you're going to have to change your form. Typically, if you're running in really cushiony built up shoes, you've probably got into the habit of landing on your heel a little bit just because you can. You don't have, there's nothing to, you know, if you land on your heel barefoot, doesn't feel great, especially if it's not on like soft grass or something. And so you're already in the habits. You kind of have to change the way you run entirely. So that at that point, it really takes a good running coach to walk you through. And a lot of, honestly, the best tips are in Born to Run. And you keep going to that, back to that book, but some of the tips that Eric Orton takes Chris McDougall through, some of the little things like having him like holding a rope around his waist and then him like pulling him forward and then letting go of the rope, or, you know, focusing on lifting your knees and keeping your back straight and imagining there's, like Steve Prefontaine used to always talk about, pretend there's a string pulling your chest up as you're running, because that keeps your back straight and it keeps your knees driving forward, like little things like that. But it, you're right, it would take a longer time and it takes a little bit of form adjustments too. But it's still just a matter of slowly transitioning, taking your time. As soon as you feel like, I mean, you're going to be sore, but as soon as you feel like a sharp pain, back off, recover, and then try it again.
That makes sense. I'm thinking about, I got really into this before I got pregnant, and then I got pregnant and I was like, give me all the supportive shoes.
Yeah.
I got really into it for a few years and I was doing barefoot runs and I was going hiking barefoot and I bought some Luna sandals. And but anyways, Jacob and I did the longest I ever ran in my Luna sandals was 12 miles. Jacob and I did this run and my feet hurt so bad. At the end of that run, I was nauseous. I've never felt pain like that in my life.
Well, you were pregnant, so nausea comes with the territory.
Well, that was before I was
pregnant. Oh, okay, okay. Yeah.
It just, my feet hurt so bad. I didn't know that feet could hurt like that. Like, it was like I could feel every single joint in my feet. It was just the craziest thing. And I was like, I think I dove into that a little faster than I should have.
Yeah, that'll do it.
Yeah, but I feel like when you're a more experienced runner and, you know, you're already running 50 miles a week, I'm just thinking out loud, it would take longer because you can't just start running the load you're already running. You can't just start running 50 miles a week in your sandals. So I feel like you would kind of have to sacrifice. Tell me what you think, but I feel like you'd kind of have to sacrifice like building up your mileage and your speed and things so you could take time to transition to more barefoot running. Would you say so?
Possibly. It probably depends on the person, but as long as you do it slow enough, you know, if you do too much, then of course you can hurt yourself. But if you do it slowly, I think you could leave your mileage right where it's at and then just slowly end your runs with some barefoot running and then end it with a little bit more. And then maybe, you know, buy some lightweight shoes and, you know, if you're running 5 miles that day, run 4 miles and then run a mile in the lightweight shoes on a soft surface and just take it easy and just try it out and stuff like that. So you start to replace your mileage with lighter stuff, lighter shoes, barefoot runs, stuff like that, little by little. So that way you don't have to like cut your mileage down and start from square one. Although for some people that might need to happen because their form needs an adjustment or something, because, you know, you guys, I'm sure you guys know this, running is a skill and it's not just like people say, oh, you just run the way you run. Well, nobody says you swim the way you swim or you just do, you know, you just do, yeah, you just do deadlifts the way you do deadlifts. It's like, no. There's a specific way you do it so that your body can be efficient. So there might need to be little adjustments here and there. So you're probably right in a lot of cases, but I think you don't always need to. It just depends on the person's overall body makeup and biomechanics.
That makes sense. But you wouldn't want to, like, let's say if your base mileage is 50 miles a week, you wouldn't want to add to your base mileage. You'd want to replace the mileage first. And then once you're, you know, you take a little bit and now you are running 50 miles with your Luna sandals, then you can start adding more mileage.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. Yeah.
What kind of shoes do you run in now then?
I just wore the toes through my head. I had some Merrill. Oh gosh, I don't remember the name.
Trail gloves?
Yes. I had the Merrill trail glove and they were great. They're super lightweight but I wore a hole through them. And then I got some Cigarro, which I don't know if you've heard of that company or not. I'll send you the name. So because I won't spell it right unless I go to the website and click on the link. I'll send you the link so you can check them out. But they make some really quality, very similar to Zero, similar shoes like that. They're just, you know, they're solid. And then right now I have another pair of Merrells that are a little bit heavier because I'm training for the Fort Frenzy Ultra here in August. And so they're got a little bit more tread to them, but they're still zero heel drop, no arch support. I'm still very lightweight, but they just give me a little bit more protection. So
how much cushion are on those suckers?
Not much at all. It's very, I mean, they have a little, it doesn't even have like an insole. They're just, yeah, it's just, so there's a little bit and there's a little bit of tread, so it's enough, but I can still feel, you know, I can still feel where I'm running, but it's just a little bit bigger. So this race in August is, it's 12, whichever one I end up doing, depending on my training, it's 12 or 24 hours and it's 3.5 mile loop of just rocks and roots and leaves. And so you got to be able to feel what you're stepping on, because you might not see the rock or the snake or the root you're about to step on, because everything, leaves are covering everything. So I just needed something with a little bit more.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Well, to me, the barefoot stuff just, I mean, the more minimalist style makes sense.
Oh, right. Sorry. I was just about to talk about your super sensitive feet.
I know, but I have sensitive feet, but here's the crazy thing. I mean, you probably don't consider this minimalist, Kayla, but I've ran all 300s. I've done three now, and I ran them in the Ultra Superiors, which is like their least cushioned shoe. It's still still like a 19, I think, millimeter cushion or whatever you got. So, I mean, you still got a good cushion, but people will, when I've run all 300s, people have come up to me and be like, "You wearing Superiors?" And they're in complete shock that I would wear a Superior. But like, you know, but then you look at that trail glove though, the Superior looks like a monster compared to that trail glove right, with the cushion. Yeah. Like the Superior looks like a Hoka.
Yeah.
But anyways, it's kind of crazy how we might be upsetting some listeners here, but it's kind of crazy that we live in such a world where Superiors are seen as minimalist, because like I'd like to think that I'm more on the minimalist side, but I then look at those trail gloves and I'm like, woo, that looks daunting. Like that's going to beat my feet up. So yeah, it's definitely got to be a process, I guess, the transition period, but I got to get myself a pair of trail gloves, dude, start running around.
Do it. It feels a lot better too. Cause it's like, I guess the reason I don't mountain bike and I run is because there's just that much. This might get, I don't know if this is nerdy or what I would call it, but there's feel a lot more connection to the outdoors when you're running, and you feel way more connection if you're running like just kind of light, lightweight stuff, minimalist gear. It's just, and I'm like that with everything that I do outdoors, whether it's hunting or fly fishing or running. It's just the more minimalist I can do, the better I feel, because I just feel that much more connected to the outdoors, because I'm not bringing in all this extemporaneous stuff into my outdoor pursuits.
Yeah.
That's why I like it. I don't think it's nerdy. I think a lot of listeners, I think a lot of ultra runners and hunters feel the same way. They have that connection with nature, you know?
Yeah. Yep.
Well, Caleb, this has been awesome. It's been really enlightening to talk with you, because injury prevention is so important.
Oh, we forgot to ask this question. Okay. I know this is kind of all over, but we wanted to ask what are the best exercises for injury prevention?
Just if you had to name a few that these are go-tos for runners.
I just want to make sure we ask that question before we end this.
Okay. Yeah. So I would say some kind of box step-ups would be number one, because that's going to strengthen your hip flexors. That's also going to strengthen your glutes, because it's giving you a little bit more range of movement than running would, but it's still the same movement. Second one would be planks, because then you're strengthening your LPHC, so your lumbar pelvic hip complex. So that whole, when I say core, that's what I mean usually, is that whole area around your stomach and your glutes and your hip flexors and all that. And then the last one, honestly, would be push-ups, because push-ups are strengthening. It's not just a chest exercise. You know, you're strengthening your entire upper body in a way that you're not going to gain size, but in a way that just, because you're kind of doing a plank while you're doing a push-up anyway, but it's just going to make your form better. Because I found when I first started running, the first ultra I did, I was having because I was slouching, and so I was having pain in my back. And then when I started doing push-ups, I just felt myself, just like my upper body form was just tighter and stronger when I was running. So push-ups, box step-ups, because there's unilateral movement in there, so you're using one limb at a time, and then planks. Those would be the best ones.
Awesome. I love that.
And then my last question for you. going back to the hunting and running combo, is we asked about a lot about how running benefited you on the hunting side. I want to know if there's anything from hunting that you've been able to apply to make you into a better runner.
I think when I go hunting, at least in Colorado, when I was hunting elk, I'd be spending days at a time in the mountains camping, and camping pretty lightweight too. And so I'd backpack in, and even a 100-mile race, you know, at worst you're looking at 30 hours or less. So basically barely a day, which I say that, and it's like, it's not just barely a day, because it's like, it's an epic changing point in your life every time you run a race like that. But the hunting I was doing, I was in the mountains for so much longer. And so mentally it was preparing me. I was by myself for long periods of time. And so running an ultra didn't seem as bad mentally, because I wasn't by myself for as long. So just I was feeling more comfortable in the mountains because of hunting. So when I went and ran an ultra, it didn't feel as uncomfortable as I probably would have if I hadn't spent any time in the mountains hunting. But also I feel like, because of the hunting, when I was running, it had a purpose to it. Not that running doesn't have a purpose to it by itself, because it does. But for me, at least, the hunting improved my running. I ran better because I was running with a purpose, and the purpose was to prepare myself for hunting. And then when I was hunting, I was thinking about, like, man, I wonder how fast I could run up this mountain right now, but I can't because I'm carrying my bow, you know?
That's awesome. You know, this podcast has inspired me to get into hunting.
Melody's tagged along a couple times with me. So
yeah, and I grew up going on hunts with my dad and grandpa. I still never got my license. I never have hunted, but I've been on a lot of hunts.
Are you guys in the Midwest?
Utah.
Utah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Got it. So you got plenty to hunt out there.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Well, for sure.
If you can get a tag.
That's right. Yeah, that's but we're still just an hour away from Idaho. You know?
Yeah, yeah. You can get a tag.
A little bit
there.
More opportunity there. Yeah. Colorado is still very non-resident friendly, at least for one more year. So.
Yeah.
Well, Caleb, this has been awesome. We really appreciate your time. If one of our listeners wants to reach out to you, where can they find you at?
Well, the main one would be, they can find my Instagram account, which you have, but it's caleb.mathewson is my main Instagram account. I have a fitness account. It's Mathewson Fitness. And that just so I could put more fitness stuff there in case somebody doesn't like hunting, which happens periodically, but also train to hunt is a good, you can check out the website or their Instagram account as well. If anybody's interested in that specific training, because that's where I do the most, more of my training work. If someone wants to get a hold of me on Instagram and just has questions about the strength training program for a runner, I'd be happy to get on the phone with them and give them some ideas of what I can put together for them. But there's a lot for your hunting, for your running listeners, and also for your hunting listeners. Between Train to Hunt and myself, there's plenty that they can find and get some more questions answered if they have any.
I love it. And it sounds like you're also the coach to go to if someone wants to transfer into minimalist shoes.
Yes. Only because I've done it.
Well, you might have one guy right here calling you up pretty soon. So
you're more than welcome to. Let's do it.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Caleb. We really appreciate you coming on.
I appreciate you guys. Thank you so much.
So a big thank you goes out to Caleb Mathewson for joining us on the pod today and sharing all that great knowledge about how to start implementing strength training and why we need to implement the strength training into our routines.
It's so important. I feel like we're seeing this movement in the running world where runners are realizing that they need to be more than a runner. They also need to be an athlete.
Yeah. I know I'm realizing that. And I'm actually feel like I'm starting to crave that more.
I think we all do. We all want to be healthy.
Yeah. I'm feeling that I'm not quite healthy. I'm not as healthy as I want to be. Like I'm had this dang calf that I've been dealing with, you know, and
right.
And it's because of my inconsistency with strength training.
Right.
And so that was kind of, honestly, my takeaway with Caleb was just kind of the vibe of like, you know, let's just take a step back from being a runner and let's focus on being an athlete again. And if you start doing that, you are gonna become a much better runner. And we're seeing that with the best 200 mile runner in the world of Mike McKnight. He's taken a step back. He's actually knocked down his mileage the last couple of years because he's in the gym more doing strength. And so it's just really cool to see that. And like, I've been seeing it with you in the gym. You've been going much more. And I've been seeing, you know, you've been getting more muscle, more and more definition, and just Thank stronger. You. And it's been really inspiring to me to see that. And I'm just like, dang, I need to get back to being an athlete. I feel like I've had times where I've felt more like an athlete, but I feel like I've gotten away from that and just kind of been like, oh, I got to get the miles in, got to get the miles. That's all I ever Right. think about is getting the miles in. And then now I feel like my running's actually kind of slipping back on me right now because I've just been too focused on getting miles in or climbing that mountain and not getting strong.
That variety yeah. is important. This podcast made me think about two different phases in my life. One, when I was a teenager, I think we all crave our teenage bodies. And what I mean by that is we all want to be able to move and fall like we could when we were teenagers, yeah. right? I used to climb on top. Not that I need to get to this point again, but I used to like climb on top of like the church building in our backyard and I'd do flips off of it and I'd land on the grass and I didn't like, and today I went on a hike with Travis and I didn't wear trail shoes. I didn't have tread and I'm like walking down these like little tiny inclines with a little bit of loose dirt. And I'm like trying to be so careful because I don't want to fall. And anyways, so I thought about that time in my life. And I also thought about when me and you were dating and we ran our first marathon and we were both also strength training a lot and we were so healthy.
And I never had any niggles.
No, me neither.
That's what I keep thinking about.
We ran fast. Like we just felt good.
I was doing insanity and also lifting at the gym three times a week.
And you were running like 6 minute miles.
Oh,
like,
I was cooking. Yeah, that's the fastest.
We were so fast.
I was an athlete.
So good. Exactly.
I was an athlete because I didn't even see myself as a runner because I got just excited about doing
the entire time we were training for a marathon. We were like, oh, we're not runners.
Yeah.
We'll never define ourselves as runners. You know, we just like being fit. And we were healthy anyway. So I just like have gone back and I'm thinking about those times in my life. And I'm like, I just want to feel like that again.
Be strong.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
I want to feel strong and healthy and fit.
Right. And yep. I want to be able to run 100 miles.
Yeah. And so, it's just, that's what my talk with Caleb made me want to do. Just be strong again, get back in the gym or just get those dumbbells, get a workout program, get a strength program.
Made me want to maybe get into hunting. I'm like that. I kind of want to pack
it's
a
awesome.
Deer out. That sounds fun.
Oh, it's so much fun. It's so much. I honestly feel like it's more fun like packing in and out than it is actually hunting sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's
I know.
So
I don't know
fun.
How I would do with all the waiting.
Yeah.
But
the waiting could get pretty, it's,
but the hiking around.
Yeah. It can be really fun. The challenge is definitely fun. So anyways, a big thank you goes out to Caleb. Make sure you check him out. You can go check out the company he works for, a great company, traintohunt.com. Go check out Caleb's Instagram handle. We have it in our show notes. You can ask him any questions you might have. Anyways, go check him out. Great guy. Really enjoyed our conversation with him. Looking forward to talking to him more in the future. So
also, if you guys want to support the show, you can support the show at trailto100.com. The best ways to support the show is to purchase any of our merchandise under swag. You can also donate to the show once a month. That is also underneath swag on our website. you can also sign up for our coaching. We do have some spots available, all on trailto100.com.
You know, not to like be devil's advocate, but I always am devil's advocate with you.
Yeah.
I thought of one better way they can support the show.
Okay, go.
Share this episode with somebody that needs to hear more
that
about strength
training. That is the best way to do it. Yep. Also, if you're on YouTube, you can tell that we've been recording for a while. The sun's gone down and it's like dark. Anyways.
Yeah. Anyways. So yeah, if this episode made you think of anyone that it could help, please share it with them. We would much appreciate it. Anyways, thank you everybody for joining us today. And remember, if you want to run 100 miles,
make it happen.